which movies struggle to find plot. Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Push the button, Rich. Push the button.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Need Carrie back here. It is time to talk movies, as we do every Monday afternoon. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joining us in studio for Pass the Popcorn. Hello there, Al.
Hello. Yeah, that was...
Now I don't have the right microphone. Try that one. There you go.
Am I here?
Yeah, you're there. Jeez.
God.
I'm falling apart.
Oh, my God. It's like the opening of 2001 in here.
Throw that bone up in the air and see if it comes down. Yeah. Ooh, my goodness gracious. Doing so well. I was fine when I was here by myself, and then you came in.
I was so excited to have a person. I mean, I get that a lot.
Someone to keep me company, then someone of your high caliber.
Well.
And we were chatting in the break about your new specs. I like those a lot.
I got new glasses, yeah. I'm pretty stoked about it. Got them at the joint over at the mall there. Dr. Goldthwait lives right next door and does
perfect. You
know, he's our optometrist, and we Sharon and I both got some new glasses. So
now this is a very personal question here, but you're significantly younger than me. Are these just bifocals, or are you in the progressive world?
I am. These are just straight up lenses.
Oh, nice.
Dr. Goldthwait and I had a frank conversation, and he's like, "You're probably okay this time. Next time, we're probably gonna need to do the progressive."
Now, are you nearsighted or farsighted?
I'm extremely nearsighted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but yeah. So it slid one more in under the wire, so I could pretend to be a young person still.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember I didn't grow up with glasses. I didn't get glasses till I was, I think, in my early 30s, and for some reason I was excited about it. I don't know why. Oh, this glasses. Yeah, I'm teaching school. They'll look very professorial. That,
sure.
Yeah. I hate them. But I can't wear contacts. I don't like poking stuff in my eye.
Yeah. I mean, I've been wearing glasses since I was like 8. So it's just like it's
second nature now.
Yep. And I also like contacts. Man, I'll just poke my fingers in there. No, it's no problem.
Ugh. Now I've got the progressive lenses, but and I'm nearsighted too. What I do to read, I take my glasses off. So what a waste of money this was.
Yeah, everything needs to be held at not full arm's length, but a distance, or I take them off and I just hold everything like, you know, 4 inches from my face. Like those are my reading options these days. So, but you know, I mean, I think they look nice.
They look very nice.
My wife thinks I look handsome, and that's really all that matters.
Well, I think that too, but that's not really for me to say.
It's a different sort of vibe,
right,
when you say it.
Exactly. But you look good. You look very good.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Well, let's talk movies. You saw a couple biggies this weekend, but one that just blew the doors. COVID. What COVID? It's Spider-Man. We're going to the movies.
Oh, it's like the third largest opening ever. Rich.
Yeah.
Ever. Like, not like no pandemic qualifiers, no, none of that. By my rough estimate, sometime around Saturday evening, maybe the early showings on Sunday, this movie became the highest grossing domestic box office film of 2021.
Wow.
In, you know, 3 days.
Nice.
I think, and they reported earlier today, it actually came in slightly higher than the initial estimates. So basically they're saying the box office for this weekend was $260 million.
Oh mama. Yeah. Hello.
Globally, it's over 500, close to 6. Look, I'm going because I have to. Like, it's work. I think I would probably be in fewer movie theaters were it not part of my job.
Right.
And we're very careful. Like, we mask up, do the whole shebang. We mask up when there are people in the theater.
Right.
We'll discuss that in a moment.
Oh dear.
Spider-Man No Way Home. Look, we've talked about this in the past. Like, I am a Spider-Man guy, tried and true. Like, I grew up reading the comic books, from my childhood all the way up. Like, I've always loved this character. Frankly, I have loved, or at least enjoyed, all of the film versions of Spider-Man, whether we talk about the Sam Raimi helmed Tobey Maguire movies, or the frankly ill-conceived Andrew Garfield films, or this new with Tom Holland in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, I find points of enjoyment in all of these films, and what that means is Spider-Man No Way Home could not have been a more satisfying cinematic experience for me. The basic gist, like, I'm not gonna give away too much, but the basic gist is we basically pick up immediately after the events of the previous film, Spider-Man Far From Home. Peter Parker has been played by Tom Holland. His identity as Spider-Man has been revealed to the world via J. Jonah Jameson, played by J.K. Simmons, who also played J. Jonah Jameson in the original Raimi films. In this particular world, he is he's an Alex Jones style conspiracy nutcase internet TV guy. So his identity is revealed to the world, and so that obviously presents a lot of problems, particularly since there are a great number of people who believe him to be responsible for the death of the villain in the previous film. In case you haven't seen it, I'm not going to spoil it, but and he's also dealing with how it impacts the people closest to him, whether it's his girlfriend MJ, played by Zendaya, who's wonderful, or his best friend Ned, played by Jacob Batalon, who continues in the MCU's tradition of just absolutely fantastic tertiary characters. His Aunt May, played by Marissa Tomei. All these people are negatively impacted by what has happened to him. And so, a few things happen, and he's like, I need to fix this. And since he is, a superhero, he goes to another superhero. Specifically, he heads over to the Sanctum Sanctorum and hooks up with Doctor Strange, Benedict Cumberbatch, and says, hey, magic guy, can you magic this away? That's never a good idea.
No.
Never, ever a good idea.
It's not going to end well.
It's not going to go the way you want it to. And due to some unfortunate circumstances, the spell that Doctor Strange attempts to cast goes awry, leading to rifts into other parts of the multiverse. I believe this is the first time where the word multiverse is actually said in an MCU movie. There's going to be a lot of that going forward. Rifts have opened to other universes, and coming through these rifts are people from those places who know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Specifically, bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
There are a couple that I can mention because they're in the trailers, so it's not like I'm spoiling anything. But Alfred Molina turns up as Dr. Octopus. He was the big bad in Spider-Man 2, the Raimi version. And Willem Dafoe is back as Norman Osborn / the Green Goblin.
Love it.
The villain from the original film. Other folks from other films also turn up. I'm not gonna name names. You can probably figure it out. It's if you think you know who it is, you probably know who it is. So I'm not gonna go any farther than that. So what follows is Spider-Man basically takes it upon himself to try to rectify what has gone wrong. But rather than send these people back to wherever it was they came from, he wants to try to help them first, to help them, move beyond the circumstances that led them in these villainous directions. It goes about as well as you'd expect. And then it all sort of snowballs from there. This movie is delightful. It is maybe the best executed combination of overall narrative advancement and fan service that I think I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Because it really does, like, for people like me who are deeply steeped in both comic book Spider-Man lore and has seen all the movies, it really connected with me in a number of really wonderful ways. But for people who aren't as familiar, it's still going to work because it's a really well-made film. Like, it's really, the storytelling is good. The action sequences are outstanding, particularly at the end when, basically all the people who have come from other places come together, in ways that are both, action packed and frankly hilarious. And there are also a lot of really wonderful emotional beats.
Well, yeah, I heard there were some, several friends who commented there were some dusty moments in the theater.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I know I teared up a couple of times due to fairly significant happenings over the course of the film. You know, look, we're in a time and a place where maybe it's not super, it doesn't feel super great to be in a crowded movie theater. Just due to the circumstances surrounding us right now. But man, like, sitting there and, like, you know, when moments would land that really pushed those buttons, like, cheers and applause. And it's just like, God.
That's why.
That's why we go to the movies. Yeah. You know, that's why we go to see these things. And that's why these big blockbuster tentpole type movies exist, is to sort of have that shared experience, especially when it's a piece of what has been an ongoing sort of saga. And so to have that experience was great. And again, like, I'm sitting there, I'm wearing a mask. You know, I'm taking whatever precautions I can, And it was one of those things where I was swept away in a way that I wasn't, like, I was always gonna like this movie. Like, I am the center of the four quadrants for this movie. But it didn't have to be this good. Like, that's the thing. They didn't need to make this movie as good as it is. But whether you're talking about the work with the character development, because that's the thing, like everybody gets an arc. Like, you know we get to see sort of ongoing development for these characters whose movies happened 10 15 20 20 years ago. Whether you're talking about Willem Dafoe and Alfred Molina, who, by the way, it's a superhero movie and it has Willem Dafoe and Alfred Molina in it, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, you just forget, like, the sort of cultural cachet that these films have, you know. And I've seen some interviews with Molina, and particularly Dafoe, who was very adamant. He's like, you know, if this is a cameo, I don't want to do it. Like, I'm not interested in just rehashing the old stuff. Like, if you've got something for me to do, like, let's do it. Because he clearly he clearly engaged with that character when he played it. And man, isn't he having a hell of a time? Him and Molina both are just great. And they're just like going for it in ways that's just delightful. And Tom Holland remains, to my mind, like, I still think he's the best Spider-Man that we've had on screen. Zendaya is a movie star.
Yep.
You know, she's, and the two of them are wonderful together. I mentioned Jacob Batalon as Ned Leeds. Just a delightful sort of, the sort of regular person character that you kind of need embedded in these stories to sort of ground them to an extent, you know. And we get to see the high school shenanigans, like those sorts of relationships, like teen romance, and, you know, those sorts of friendships. Those are a part of it, alongside these sort of, you know, grand scale sort of, you know, epic battles between good and evil and whatnot. And, you know, even there, sometimes the lines are blurred a little bit. So, yeah, I could not have enjoyed this movie more. I am not at all shocked that it was successful. I mean, I'm shocked that it was this successful, just because I wasn't sure. I honestly wasn't sure if an opening like this was ever going to happen again, just because of the circumstances,
right?
You know, but they really hit the nail on the head with this one, and it will be very interesting. A lot of pieces, a lot of groundwork has been laid to see what is going to happen going forward. They draw from the movies, they draw from the television shows. Like, it is definitely becoming a much more of an all-encompassing sort of thing. Whether that's good, I don't know. Like, the reality is, you can only keep so many plates spinning before stuff starts crashing to the ground. But at this point, like, I'm done. I'm done predicting the downfall of Marvel. Like, it's just like, you know, there it's it's going to be a while. So, you know, buckle up because the MCU is here to stay.
Excellent. All right. Another movie. We're talking with Alan Adams of The Main Edge on Downtown Man. All-star cast, legendary director with his first film in what, 4 years? Got to be a winner with Nightmare Alley, right?
From the movie that everybody saw to the movie that nobody saw, you know, it's like all accounts are that Nightmare Alley is a box office wise, a flop, like a big one. And again, like there it's, I'll tell you this right now. It is not the fault of the film at all. I think they made some odd marketing choices. I think the reality is any movie that opened opposite Spider-Man was going to get hammered. and it just happens to be a wonderfully thoughtful and visually stunning sort of noir thriller by, frankly, one of the genre masters of filmmaking in Guillermo del Toro. Bradley Cooper, Cate Blanchett, Willem Dafoe, big weekend for him. a couple of the sort of Del Toro regulars, Ron Perlman's in this movie. Richard Jenkins is in this movie.
Is this the same story that was a wonderful film noir back in the 40s?
The Tyrone Power film, yes.
Okay, wow.
It is, although Del Toro has said that this is based on the book rather than the movie. So, because the book, which is the same name, I forget the guy's name. Gresham, I think, came out a couple years before the Tyrone Power film. He's sort of gone back to that source material rather than trying to remake I believe 1947.
I think
film,
so. Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's a noir classic. So, you know, do your own thing, Guillermo. Right. Like, do what you do, and we'll ride along with you. The basic gist is Cooper stars as a guy named Stan Carlisle. He's a drifter. We first meet him in the midst of some pretty intense activity. I know it's the first beginning of the movie, but it's much better if you come into it clean. The results of those activities means that he hits the road, kind of a drifter, winds up at the end of the line, and at the end of the line is this ramshackle, sort of rundown traveling carnival. And he gets off the bus and starts wandering around and basically winds up, in the presence of the owner of the place, played by Dafoe, who basically is like, you want to help us tear down? I'll give you a buck and a hot meal and you can be on your way. He agrees, works, but then circumstances sort of bring him a little closer. Dafoe is like, well, maybe do you want a full-time job? Like, do you want to be more involved? And this is where Stan sort of winds up hooking up with the carnival's sort of mentalist team. You've got Xena, played by Toni Collette, and her husband, Pete, an alcoholic former mentalist, played by the great David Strathairn.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Friend of Downtown.
I was going to say. So he sort of hooks up with them. And kind of starts developing an interest in learning more about the act, which is, you know, it's the standard like combination of cold reading and, you know, and verbal cues that sort of thing. Like they have this whole book that they've created. Like Pete was apparently quite a mentalism legend back in the day. And so he has developed this whole system. And meanwhile, he's wandering around the carnival and encountering other people. There's the strongman Bruno, that's Ron Perlman, who's great, and Electro Girl. This young lady named Molly, who is her whole bit is like they have this sort of like Tesla coil type thing where it's like it's not really hurting you, but they're just very impressive with all the electricity, and that's Rooney Mara.
Oh wow.
So he's sort of learning the ropes and, you know, making his way through the carnival, kind of falls for Molly, and he decides that he's going to strike out on his own, he wants Molly to come with him. Leap forward, they have become a much more upscale act, playing nightclubs instead of sideshows. They're in the club and not on the midway. And that's when they run into a psychiatrist named Lilith, played by Kate Blanchett, who is stunning in this movie. It's like she's carved out of a block of ice. Like, she's just amazing. Like, oh. She's a skeptic who tries to sort of trip up Stander in the midst of his act. He, being a fairly gifted grifter at this point, sort of works his way through it. And that winds up connecting him with some of the more wealthy folks in town, the town being Buffalo, of all places. Okay. He gets sucked into doing these more private sorts of situations before ultimately starting to make some promises he can't keep to some very dangerous people, specifically a reclusive millionaire played by Richard Jenkins. Things start to go off the rails pretty quickly. We start to see some cracks in the charming veneer of one Mr. Stan Carlyle, and things get pretty rough pretty fast. Mm. One of the great things about what Del Toro does is he has this wonderful affinity for, the grotesque, his fascination with like fairy tales and those sort of, that sort of horror imagery like permeates all of his work.
Right.
And, you know, this is a much more straightforward, the supernatural elements that there are largely cons. Like, that's the whole deal. But he still sort of brings in that sort of element of the fringe, the outlier. Because we spend the first half of the movie in a sideshow. And it is a, like, post-World War II era sideshow. So it's got, there are a couple of sequences involving the carnival's geek that are pretty unsettling.
Hmm.
Both in terms of seeing the geek in action and learning about, well, what goes into making a geek, because Defoe really breaks it down for you in a way that is, I can't even describe it. Like, he really just nails it. You have that sort of element to it where he's really kind of elevating that sense of the weird, the like I said, the fringes, and he's doing it all in that very beautiful, haunting sort of Del Toro way where everything is like saturated with color and like all this wonderful imagery, whether you're talking about the sort of rundown nature of the carnival or these sort of cavernous mansions that these wealthy people live in. Like, the production design is so striking. Like, everything is just beautifully selected for its maximum impact on the visual. And then you add in the fact that it is just, like you said, the cast is stacked.
Oh.
Like, just an absolute dynamite collection of performers. Cooper's great. Mara's great. Colette and Strathairn, like Perlman, Defoe, like they're not in the movie a ton, but what we get from them is, it's like they're all dealing. Again, we're just gonna separate out Kate Blanchett, because, man, I don't know if there is a better person in Hollywood to play that sort of like ice cold, like femme fatale type role. And the scenes between her and Cooper particularly just crackle. Like, there is just such electricity there. It's really just so much fun to watch. And ultimately, it's a shame. It's a shame that people aren't going to see this movie, because it's like, word is, it's already being pulled from theaters. Huh. You're hearing things about how, people who bought advance tickets are like, actually, we're giving you a refund because we've canceled this showing so we can show Spider-Man again.
Mm.
That's not what you want. Like, and this is coming from someone who absolutely adored that Spider-Man movie, but it's like, do you need it on? Do you need 14 showings of it a day? Like, make some room for these other movies.
Right.
I think that's important.
Now, is it going to streaming services anytime soon?
It's hard to tell. Like, it doesn't, like, the it doesn't have that sort of pre-existing relationship that some of these other films do. So I honestly don't know. I mean, granted, the theatrical window has been pretty severely truncated for all movies, and so I imagine it will turn up sooner rather than later. But ultimately, it's the sort of movie that definitely will benefit from seeing on a big screen, just because Del Toro is one of those big vision guys. And so, to be able to see it sort of laid out on the big screen like that, it's pretty remarkable.
All right. Alan Adams with a couple of good ones this week on Pass the Popcorn. Thanks, Al.
Hey, I got one more thing if you got a minute.
Yeah, sure.
Just as a heads up, I am our good friend Brian Sullivan reached out to me today. The folks at WABI are doing a Christmas movie bracket.
Ooh.
And they've reached they're concluding voting tonight. And so I'm going to go on the air with him tomorrow at 5 and 6. Going to talk about the finalists, talk about the winner,
nice.
And talk about a couple of movies that got jobbed, whether it was Ooh. Like a tough draw or frankly the voters making a mistake. And okay. I will happily call out folks for making bad choices. So
I look forward to seeing what those bad choices were. Awesome. Well, we'll look forward. And so when's that on again?
It's going to be on the 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock broadcast.
Excellent.
Tomorrow night.
All right. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
And thanks, by the way, to Sheridan and you for the lovely box of goodies.
Oh man, you are going to enjoy yourself.
Yes, I am.
You know, and maybe sneak it past the boy if you can, because once he gets wind of what's in there,
oh boy,
it's gonna be all over.
All right, thanks, Al.
My pleasure.